everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com. If you would like to tell us what to watch, what to avoid, what to read, then you should contact us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com or talk to us on our Discord. It is cool and happening, and cool people talk about One Piece or other shows that they are enjoying, or like...
Thank you for saying that in a super robotic way.
No problem. How about this? You can have a fun time, kids, telling us about your theories.
No, that's like Monster Truck Rally commercial.
You can, how about this? Come in and tell us your hot takes about what you think is going to happen in Gundam...
Fury?
Yeah, The Witch from Mercury Season 2. You know...
This episode, and we are also coming to you from my new kitchen table and chairs, which, like, I'm really excited about because the old table and chairs kind of, like, squeaked and stuff. So now that won't happen on the podcast anymore.
The table is definitely bigger and I would say nicer, but it feels more like... conference table than dinner table.
Get out of my house. This podcast is going to be kind of a catch-all episode where we just talk about recent things that we've been watching and reading. Not necessarily, I guess most of them are current, but you know, back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
current-ish.
That's the Reverse Thieves way.
But first,
we have the Typhoon Minute. Not much going on because we just finished up the Valentine's Day event, and thereby the thing that immediately comes after it is the White Day event in FGO, which is the Chidelian, I want to say military industrial complex.
You're close. Heavy industry.
Yes. So yeah, it's when all the guys are instead on raid up and all, you know, male servant related stuff, whereas Valentine's Day is all female servant related. So all the servants, all the little like cards you get, CEs, have guys on them and they're all voiced. So normally you just get a CE and it has that, but all the White Day ones, they have like a little voice skit. So the male voice actors get a little chance to shine on that. And the main servant is one of the servants from the Guda Guda event who's in what they call NPC jail. There are a bunch of characters who have made cool appearances in the story with like character sprites and everything, but we're not playable characters. And the hot red-headed archer guy was a popular character from an old event that finally got into the game. So a bunch of people were happy that he got sprung from NPC jail. The event just came out today, so I don't have really that much to say about it. But I just thought it was interesting that I could mention NPC jail and characters getting freed from it. Actually, Pope Joan from the last event was also a character from NPC jail. So they recently have been springing a lot of people from NPC jail.
No St. Patrick's Day event?
I'm sure one year they'll probably, since they align well, they could have like a, do that as a, you know, like have a St. Patrick-y type servant the same time they have the, White Day event. So it's not impossible. Although, like, the two main, Irish servants are Cú Chulainn and Bizet, and they've already been in the game, but Cú Chulainn's gotten, he's a rather popular guy, so he's gotten a bunch of variants already in the game, so I guess they could have, a St. Patrick's Cú Chulainn if they really wanted.
He's wearing a green hat. That's...
But yeah, that's about it. There'll probably be other stuff, but the next like big, like always planned thing is the collab is Golden Week. So they'll probably have some other stuff, or hopefully we'll have some other Night Moon news in the coming month. But until then, I will see you next month, Tight Lunatics. So, let us be semi-relevant, and I will talk about one of the shows, the few shows I've been watching, not with Kate and our little group.
Although I do want to watch this one. Liked it.
So I won't be too spoilery. So I do not. But I will talk about the magical revolution
of
the reincarnated princess and the genius young lady. And we talked about this series in our season review. And we both enjoyed it and wanted to see more of it. And I was like, all right, I think I basically finished since there is no way with that title, this is not based on the light novel.
It's impossible.
I think I've basically finished what would be the first book. There's still more of the season, but it's pretty clear to me that this was like the part that I just watched and then one episode more of that. Was the end of the first book. So I thought this would be a nice time to at least talk about the series. Just this quick rundown for anybody who maybe did not listen to last month's episode.
That was a marathon episode. So
in the show, there is a young princess who has abdicated the throne and basically devoted, because she does not have magical power, and since most of the nobles have magical power and derive their basically right to rule from having magic, she has abdicated the throne, being not able to cast magic, and instead essentially works on magic tech, basically like using magical items to infuse objects with magical power to let people who are not magical or people who are magic use magic items to duplicate the effects of magical spells. And so she's considered a super eccentric weirdo that most of the nobility do not want to hang around with, and is somewhat of a pariah, and she's known as the marauding princess, because she goes around basically like being an adventurer, beating up monsters to get the magical items she needs for her magitech. And in the first episode, there is a young lady who is fiance to her brother. And
okay, the way that you said that, it made it sound like the young lady is a fiance to her own brother.
No, I'm sorry. There is another. The titular, genius young lady is engaged
to the princess's brother. The prince of the land.
Yes. And they basically...
But that other one is another show.
Yes, I'm sure. All Super Game of Thrones. He's like, you've deframed this young commoner lady that I'm in love with, and I'm gonna break off my engagement with you and show all the people what a cruel,
villainous,
you are. And the sister, who is testing her like flying broom, accidentally crashes in the party and goes and basically like steals, quote unquote, the magic, the genius young lady, and basically is like, you're going to be my assistant and I'm going to win you over. And that's like the end of the first episode.
That's the setup for the whole story going forward.
And so So without spoiling too much, basically, the first whole arc of this is about, like, what led up to the engagement breaking off, why. Because, you know, when the main character, interrogates, the genius young lady, she's like, I gave her, like, a little bit of, like, social advice and something, but, like, I didn't try to have her killed. I didn't have anybody bullying her. Like, we didn't even talk that much. It was just more like, I was just like, you're really close to my fiance and it looks bad. Like, you gotta, like, think about, what people, it's not a good look on you. We find out a lot of, like, what went down, why everybody thinks what's going on happened, like, who's behind, this misunderstanding, and maybe a more sinister plot. And that pretty much mostly wraps up at the end of this thing. And so,
That is so interesting. I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the dominant narrative of the first arc. So how much does the magic and magic tech play into that?
I'd say a decent amount, but it's all very, it's very important, but it's also very periphery. I feel like the magic tech is very clearly the most important thing and will be important going forward. But everybody's, at least partially, motivation is partially behind part of that. But it's very few characters' main motivation. I don't want to spoil too much.
So it sounds like maybe the first arc is sort of setting up the relationships, like, so that you kind of have a lay of the land and then this other story will emerge.
Yeah. So that's that. I feel like the thing that I wanted to comment on more was, I guess, the romantic interest aspect, because, like, it's interesting in the fact that our main character is kind of like the most vocal about, like, oh, you're so pretty, I'm going to win you over kind of thing. But it seems like a lot of bluster from her. Whereas our genius young lady is, like, seems to be the one. And maybe just because we only really see her inner thoughts when it comes to romance. We don't really see, when we see the main character's thoughts, it's very rarely about romance. When we see the genius young lady's inner thoughts, it's more often about romance. And so, like there are a few characters, like, especially in the beginning of the second arc, are like, so, like, you do realize that, like, you totally have a thing for our main character, right? And so she seems the one that talks about it the most, but realizes it the least. And our main character at least talks about it the most, but we're a little unsure of what, I feel like in the end we'll probably be, but it's interesting that we don't really get too much of our inner monologue or thoughts about that. So in a way, her actual feelings are a little black boxy about it. But it does seem like at times, especially past the first episode, it almost seems like the genius young lady is more of our point of view character, and we get a little more of her thoughts and feelings on things. And I enjoyed the first arc. I'm a little curious where things are gonna go, because certain things have changed that make me, I thought I had a very clear roadmap of how I thought the show was going to go, but certain things at the end of the first season make me curious. Also, like, little revelation at the, like, end of the first episode of this, basically the second book, make me curious. Interested to see where it goes.
Sounds like it's one of those shows, you know, I feel like with a lot of fun fantasy stories, you know, that aren't super serious, I kind of never know if it's going to continue in a, like, forward momentum or if it's going to be a, like, a wacky slice of life fantasy series. So it sounds like this has a lot of forward progress.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of forward progress. I mean, the second arc is already dealing with serious issues, so it's not like it's like, all right, we got that main plot out of the way, so now, you know, let's have three books of chicken chase.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like something I'm really wanting to go back and watch this one. It can be my new Faraway Paladin until we get season two of Faraway Paladin. Oh wait, does the isekai come up at all? I'm happy if you say no, but, like,
if it does, I don't remember it.
It is so minor.
Yeah.
Continues to be super minor.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, I could theoretically claim that, like, you know, her general shift in personality when she starts remembering stuff is also when she gets, like, heavily involved in Magitek and changes a bunch of stuff. So, theoretically, that's important. But, literally, all she had to do was just get interested in Magitek and not because she remembered her past lives. Thereby, that is the importance of it. But, there is nothing about this story that I could not, with minimal effort, rewrite in my and take out the isekai of it, because it is effortless to just say that because she has no magic, she's just, you know, and has this dream of using magic to help people, that's why she invents Magitek. No isekai required.
That's how I like my isekai.
What do you call it? I love my isekai without isekai. It's the best isekai.
All right. So, moving from the magical realm back into the... I think actually everything we're talking about... Oh, no, wait. Maybe that doesn't have magic in it. You'll have to tell us. But anyway, I feel like this is the only one that's just, like, grounded in, like, contemporary story. So... once again, just to prove that I actually listen to people in the Discord, I have gone back and started watching Bocchi the Rock. This was something that came up in our review of last year and something that both Al and I had said, oh, we had heard, like, a lot of people were talking about it, but it was something we hadn't watched. And it came up in the Discord, so... I was like, fine, going for it. And I've watched 5 episodes. And actually, I feel like that's a little mini arc in the story. So I think that is a pretty good point to, like, start talking about it.
I just want to say one thing. Because if it's not apparent for people who do not know Kate as well as I do, this was no small feat for Kate. I think to you and me, this is obvious, but maybe to the listeners, it is not, that, like, the scars of Kaon are deep in Kate's soul for, like, being forced to watch an episode two of Kaon, and just, like, despising it with her essence and being, like, super worried that Bocchi and the Rock was just the second coming of Kaon. So the fact that Kate actually was like, I will actually attempt this show, even though it could be merely the second coming of Kaon, is pretty, like, brave, Kate, brave.
Thank you. I like to think that I'm always growing as a person. So So Bochy the Rock is about this like fledgling band, and our main character, who kind of her nickname is Bochy. She initially gets into guitar in middle school, and she has a lot of social anxiety, and you know, she has trouble connecting with people, and she's like, I'm going to learn the guitar, and then I'm going to, and like, she hears, you know, musicians talking about like, hey, I was the kid in school who like didn't have any friends, and like, look at me today. And so she gets really inspired by this and decides to like learn the guitar, and like has these big dreams about like, she's going to become like the coolest person, and everybody's going to look up to her, and she's going to be a badass, and she's going to be an amazing guitarist. So then we skip forward a couple of years, and she's in high school, and she has learned to play the guitar, and she is really good. So she has a, you know, like a YouTube channel where she uploads her playing without like showing, you know, herself. And she has like a following on there, and people are always telling her how great she is. But becoming a musician has not, you know, elevated her social status in regular life. And once she's in high school, she's like, I gotta, you know, the kind of the classic setup of like, it's high school and like, I gotta like change and like, you know, do something. So she decides that, the way that she could get people to talk to her is that she's going to like bring her guitar to school and carry it around. So people are like, look at that girl. She's a cool guitarist. And that, only doesn't work the way that she thinks it's going to, but she gets pulled in by another girl like off the street and is like, hey, you play guitar? Great. I need a guitarist right now. Like, come with me. And that's sort of how she then gets embroiled in this like new friend group and actually performing, and the girl that she meets takes her to this club and is basically like, hey, you know how to play guitar, just get on stage with us immediately. And for Bochy, this is like an impossible task, and they kind of bomb. And Bochy comes to find out, right, that like, she is an amazing guitarist, but she has never played guitar with another human being. She has never played in a group, and like, she doesn't know how to like follow other people in music. I mean, I'm not a musician, so like, you know, I'm kind of just repeating what the story is telling me, but like, she doesn't know how to play with a group. So they actually, the group that she's playing with in the first, actually so far, one of course doesn't know she's on social media as this like, like one of the girls listens to this person, you know, on YouTube and is like, this is an amazing guitarist. Like, this is what an amazing guitar sounds like. And so far they don't know that is Bochy. And like, she does get better over the course of these 5 episodes with like playing with them, but she's still not there. And so like, no, like they basically think that she sucks and that she's just learning to get better over the course. And she is. But she doesn't actually suck. She just doesn't know how to play with a group. It has kind of a, you know, like, all the girls in the group have, like, very different personalities. So we get the more, like, rocker girl who is, like, you know, serious and dark musician. And then we have the girl who, like, pulled her in, who's, like, the ganky leader, and she's the drummer. And then we have the girl who comes back into the group because the person Bochy was replacing was this girl who just, like, didn't show up. And, like, how she comes back into the fold, and then they become, you know, like, by the end of the 5th episode, they're, like, able to play together and, like, actually play a song and then, like, get a gig from playing, you know, an original song and stuff like that. So I feel like that's a nice, like, little arc for them. and shows like growth for pretty much everybody in various ways, because they're also trying to, like, you know, promote themselves, or like, how do we be a real band? And but so Bochy, you know, doesn't just suddenly she's with a friend group and now she's lost her social anxiety. Like, if anything, the one thing I would say about this show is that I think that it's really accurate, but almost to the point of being like hard to watch sometimes, where I'm like, oh no, I'm having like secondhand cringe embarrassment, but like I really don't like that feeling. It really tackles Bochy's inner, it's like really from her point of view. So like just how insurmountable social anxiety can be at times. And like, there's a, I don't know if it's the first episode, but it's like an early episode where it's like this giant, like somebody's like, ah, like you've taken one step forward today. And she's like, I thought it was like 100. Like, I thought I did 100, you know, I thought I got so far. And they were like, good job, one step. And then, you know, she sees this vast staircase. So like, I think it has a really, it feels really authentic in understanding sort of how like the mind works, and kind of a two steps forward, one step back momentum for Bochy. Like, it even tackles sort of like, this is not specific to social anxiety either, but it's like the things we tell ourselves about like, tomorrow I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be different tomorrow. I'm going to be different. And then like, when tomorrow comes and you can't do it, you know, it's just like, there are a lot of moments like that. There's a lot of positive moments too, and funny moments and stuff. But like, I sometimes, parts of these episodes, I'm a little like, oh, I don't know, this is like too real. But also then like, there are really funny stuff, especially I think it hits a really good momentum, probably like episode 5. So I think I'll continue it. I don't love it, I guess. At least I don't feel like I love it right now, but I also don't dislike it at all and feel like it's good. It is a good thing that is happening. And like, there's forward momentum. It's not a slice of life show. And I don't feel like it is a show that's supposed to be showing how cute the girls are, like that's the point of the show or anything. It's interesting. I feel like I'm not gonna be like in a, like praising this like the way some people were like, this was the best show of the year and all of that, but like, I like it.
So apparently all the bands that are featured are based on actual bands. Like, Bochy's band is apparently based on Asian Kung Fu Generation, and like, apparently all the like last names are sync up to band members in Asian Kung Fu. And there are other bands that eventually, I don't know if you've met any of them.
No, we haven't gotten to really any other. Well, maybe there was one briefly, but yeah.
Apparently there are other bands in the group, and they're like vaguely based on other bands as well. So if you're like a big, like, especially Japanese music person, you can probably, I see, this is, you know, the only thing I could think is recently to be on some of those vaguely similar, there's this one VTuber that I kind of been watching recently called Anna Alouette, and her, one of her whole shticks is that she is a person who's suffered like intense like social anxiety her whole life. In fact, one of our mutual friends sent me like a tweet that she said that like was just like, what do you call it, every day is proof that life is miserable and that I need therapy.
Wow.
And they sent it to me with the like, look, someone who has your exact, what do you call it, mindset of life. And I was like, yeah, no, that's very, very true. But yeah, no, I do feel like it is that thing that is a lot more acknowledged in like current media that and it's just interesting that like I feel like I think that's why a lot of people latched on to Bocchi the Rock, because especially in nerdy circles that like, you know, there are a lot of people with social anxiety and thereby, you know, a character like that who, like you said, is realistic enough that it like gives you like decent secondhand cringe is, I don't know, I feel like that's a lot of people feel seen.
Yeah, and like, I was thinking also just in terms of mindset, you know, she talks about how she hates all those songs that are like positive and like, you know, oh, everything's going to be fine and like everything's great and your dreams are going to come true. And she's like, no, like, you know, like the things that Bocchi wants to sing about are just like, and they kind of encourage her to be like, let's do that. You know, like somebody is going to connect with that. Like if you connect with that somebody, you know, like be authentic. Like, so yeah, it's good. I'm curious to watch more. I probably will. I'm especially now that they kind of feel like it's the first step in their cohesion as a band. I'm kind of wondering, you know, what is the bigger story past that point? And, it seemed like this was a pretty big hit, but I think a little unexpectedly. So
yeah, I was going to mention it definitely, like everything that I've read, it was like a kind of like mid-tier manga series. And apparently it's, you know, the classic, it gets an anime and then like the sales numbers spike through the ceiling. And like it comes, you know, from like, you know, like mid-tier, like maybe where it is going to get canceled manga to like most popular. So yeah, no, it is definitely a series that blew up because of the anime.
It's interesting too, you know, they really save their budget for when they need to show somebody playing an instrument, which is natural. But I think the eye catch image for the series looks so polished, and then like the actual anime is like much more simple looking than that like image, which is, again, I think that image gave me K-On! Vibes, but like the show itself really doesn't, you know, I don't want to use the word like live up to that, because like I think it's perfectly serviceable, but it doesn't look like that amazing. I think that it's almost like that helps me. Because also there's moments where like Bocchi turns into like kind of this blobby, like weirdly shaped, like when things, you know, when things are freaking her out or whatever, and like the animation sort of gets all wonky and stuff. So
I know, I was like, oh, I should watch this. You know what I'm gonna do?
You're gonna use me as an experiment.
Yes. 100%. I'm not even gonna like sugarcoat it. I'm like, if Kate's gonna throw herself on that grenade, I will then see if it explodes or not. And so I was vaguely tempted to like, because I saw you watch a few episodes, and like I haven't seen on our like our private Discord, Kate be like, this is the worst show that I've ever
How seen. Dare you lead me down this path?
Everyone of you fuckers in this Discord that recommended to me, I'm going to hunt you down and kill you. So since that didn't happen, but I'm like, you know what? The next episode of The Speakeasy is coming up. And Kate's probably going to talk about it. So I'll just wait to see what she says, and then I'll see if I can watch it or not. So,
But I'm probably guessing that it's going to get another season based on just how
crazy popular it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which I'm sure was not really the plan for it necessarily. So, we'll see where the first season leads us and let you know if I'm going to tune in for whenever season two will surely happen. Maybe. And of course the animation budget will probably go way up for season two.
Yeah, if nothing else, maybe we'll, when the first season is over, maybe we'll do a if we both finish it at the same time. Maybe we'll do a joint Bochy to Rock. But Kate, I have one important question. Do we ever, throughout the 5 episodes that you've seen, learn what Bochy is cooking? Kate was really hoping. I made this joke. I'm gonna level with everybody. I made this joke before the podcast. And I think Kate was just like,
I was so close, you guys. I almost got all the way. I thought Al had maybe forgotten.
Yes, but I never remember. I never forget a dumb joke. I forget so many other things. So many other things. But the one thing that my mind will not forget is dumb jokes. So.
Segue from Bochy the Rock to Vinland Saga.
Look, if there's a show that does not have any dumb jokes in it, it is Vinland Saga. I'm going to spoil a little bit of season 1 of Vinland Saga. So if you're like never seen Vinland Saga or plan to get around to it. So Vinland Saga is a story. There's this young man whose father is like a legendary warrior who's like settled down and, you know, put a life of, you know, Viking raiding and violence behind him. And he just wants to raise a family and be a farmer. Be a good man who puts all that behind him. And basically has seen the era of violence. In fact, like one of the important lines, very important, he tells his son that no one is your enemy. No one is inherently your enemy. That what do you call it? By pursuing violence, and by pursuing darkness, those things will just become part of your life. So do not inherently see people as your, you know, them, us, we're all humans. No one is your enemy. And so he quickly gets dissuaded of this when some Vikings who have very important political and, you know, conquest-based agenda want his dad to come back into the fold. And when they don't, they just don't want him around just in case. When you call it, he maybe is persuaded by their enemies or just anyone else. So they basically assassinate his father, and he like declares that he's gonna avenge his father, and he tries to kill the leader of the mercenary band that, you know, was paid to ambush his father, this guy Ashlad, and he totally fails, and the guy realizes this kid has potential, so he's like, all right, if you stick around and work for me, I'll give you these, every time like we do a successful raid, I'll give you a chance to fight me again and assassinate me. And so like the whole first season is him like going on all these raids with this guy and like leveling up his like fighting ability to kill this guy. And like them developing like this weird, like almost like demented father-son relationship where like it's clear that Ashlad kind of after a while like has an affection for him, but like our main characters continually try to murder him, and they get involved in all this Viking politics and English and Danish politics. And they, like, near the end of the season, they're, like, protecting this young, like, very effeminate, very, like, he, like, got involved in Christianity and he doesn't want to do violence and he just wants to bring peace to, like, the kingdom, young man. And people try to assassinate him. And at the end of the first season, Ashlad basically breaks our main character. He's basically left empty. Bum, 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 revelation. And as I mentioned, when the first season ended, I was very, because I've read further in the manga, I was like, I'm very curious how the fan base and just people are going to react to season two, because it starts very differently. And our main character from this point on is a very different person. He is never that guy again. And I was very curious. Because this episode, this season starts where basically, because of everything that happened in the first season, our main character is a slave on a farm. And he's just this broken guy who just, there's no, for the longest time, there is no, there's one or two like little fights and like things, but there's no grand battles. Like, as I said, there were a lot of people who didn't like the first season because, like, oh, well, this is set in a historical setting with historical characters. Like, these fights are over the top and, like, essentially too awesome to be real. And everybody who likes the series is like, and the problem is? So we get cool politics and, like, ruminations on the human condition and awesome fights. I don't see any problem with this. And then you go to this second season, which starts with this character just being this broken, empty vessel, just drifting through his life of bondage. And eventually, like, there's this other slave who, like, gets paired up with them, and they kind of interact and grow. Our main character finds new purpose in life through his interaction with his friend, and things will pick up. But from what I've seen of like articles and videos and stuff, it seems like a very, the opinions are very mixed. They're the people who like read the manga, and basically anybody who's stuck with the manga, stuck that have like basically either got through or enjoyed basically what's called the farmland arc. So they were kind of like me, curiously watching the anime only. And yeah, no, there's like a bunch of people who were like, I'm out, or like, hey, people read the manga, does this ever get better? And then a bunch of people like, this is fascinating, like, but like an amazing, like,
pivot.
Yeah, pivot. And like really, really gutsy amount of character development to like go from this like Eren Jaeger style, like, you know, man obsessed with revenge and like violence is my only path, to like, I'm gonna be a man of peace, I'm gonna like eschew all violence, I'm gonna like be a lifesaver, someone who's dedicated to improving other people's lives as a way of like making up for all the lives I took, in my opinion, pointlessly. And like, and then eventually he gets like, he has to like maintain these values while being drawn back into a life of violence while he's trying to get to a life of peace. And so so like people who already read the manga, like, ah, man, if you're on board, just wait until you get to the later parts. And, you know, people who like unexpected, like who have enjoyed it, is like, my mind is blown. This is, I've like read several think piece articles or like videos saying like, I'm, like people just like totally blown away that like you could have such a richness of you know, people say they want, you know, character growth, character change. You don't get more drastic than that. So I just, you know, I'm really enjoying it. I think, you know, the direction's pretty good. But yeah, I was just extremely fascinated to just see how many people have been like turned off and how many people have been like perplexed and how many people have been like fascinated by the turn the show makes. But yeah, no, it does seem to be like this great back. Like the farmland arc is definitely like this great barrier. Like, I feel like there are certain people who like will pretend that only season one of Vinland Saga ever existed. And then there are this other group who are very curious and like see where the series goes. Because like there is a return to like the ultraviolence and the action and the politics. I mean, Canute, who is a historical king, and also, you know, the young, you know, naive prince is now like assassinating relatives and like building power. And he's almost taken like the exact opposite message that our main character has from the thing. And like eventually they'll cross paths several times. And like,
obviously, this is not the first time you're encountering this arc mm-hmm. now, but how do you feel about this arc?
I think it's really interesting character growth and development. Like, I feel like when I read it originally, I was super surprised. I kind of expected like the next arc to be like this, like, all right, now our main character has to escape after, you know, Ashlad killed the king, and you know, and then you know, it's gonna be like an escape drama, and then, you know, how can he survive and get to safety? But he doesn't. He gets captured and put into slavery, and we see him years later. And so, like, so I was very curious to where I went. And I was like, and even by the end of the farmland arc, some serious shite goes down. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who, you know, was only watching the anime. But if you're, like, if you're waiting for something big to happen, just get to the end of the farmland arc. You, things will get very serious very soon, and if you're paying attention, it should be obvious why. But I think even then, I think if you've not read the manga, there'll be some surprising things that happen. I think that this arc is essential for the rest of the story, because you need this time for our main character. If there was any less time spent in this arc, how it is, any changes to his personality would seem artificial. Like, you cannot go from a revenge, like, revenge being your whole life and violence being your main method of, your only method of expression, to I'm a man of peace and that, like, what do you call it? I'm going to seek peace and try to help people in, like, you could do it in an episode, but it's going to feel really fake and really, like, mechanical and, like, I need this character to go from A to B, so it happens. You need this long transition of he goes from this type of person to this type of person to this type of person to that type of person. You need a, like, a, it's not a switch. He goes from man of war to man of peace. You need transitional stages. And I think the only way that can happen is the farmland arc. And so it is, especially in retrospect, amazingly essential. There's literally no other way for the mangaka to tell the story that he wants to tell without being this arc. You could flash back to it, but it's not the same as if you go with it. You go through our main character's journey with him. I feel like I understand why people would drop off, and that's okay, but maybe there would be a way to do it that would be less drop-off-y to some of the fan base, but I feel like there's a distinct power from the way the story is told how it is.
It sounds like it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And I also think it's interesting what you're saying. I have not read Vinland Saga or watched it or anything. But what you're saying, I think, you know, in terms of like drop off, I think, and I've definitely done this with a show. So like, I'm not saying anybody is wrong for doing that, but it's probably, I thought the show, you know what I mean? Like, I thought the show was about this, and it's like, the show was always about the same thing. It doesn't sound like to me, based on what you're describing, that it fundamentally changes what the story is about. It's just what you thought it was about versus like what the mangaka is saying it is about, you know, like, so.
Because, yeah, it's very clear from how his dad, Thorin, sets up and tries to teach him. And then, in a way, the part that these people thought the show was about the violence and the thing. But that was like, that is there to show him doing essentially the wrong thing. And like, it's like a long object lesson in why this life is wrong. And then the farmland arc is like, it feels like a rug pull to some people, but it's like, if you knew how to, I feel bad, it feels a little condescending to say properly read, but if you were on the same wavelength as the author, I think is a better way to put it, then it's clear what the purpose of like the revenge, I don't know what the fan name or like the official name for it is, but what the point of the revenge arc is to build him into this character so he can like have these regrets and have change. But I'm enjoying it. I thought it was interesting to talk about how like there is this like great barrier with this farmland arc and like what it's trying to do, and like showing that it's not like the monk card got tired of like doing the violent stuff, so he made this new story out of nowhere. Like, it's very clear if you look at the beginning, this was always the trajectory. It's very clear that like his, you know, he felt impotent and he was trying to regain some sense of strength, and he did all these things, and he realized in the worst possible way that like what was going on. And then, as he said, I've lived my life so much for revenge and vengeance and violence. Now that that's gone, when am I? Who am I? What do I have? And then, like, slowly regaining that. And regaining his humanity. Regaining, like, the lessons that he learned early in life. And just all that. So I feel like my only thing is, if you enjoyed the first season and have been turned off I'd say that, like, there will be violence again. There will be big battles. Our main characters will be involved in politics again and drama and, you know, tension. If you can, I'd give it a little more. At least get to the end of the farmland arc. I feel like that the conclusion to the farmland arc will probably tell you if you should go on or not. If you think that the twists and how that story resolves and the new path that they're on might convince you that it is not totally not the show that you thought it was. But it is definitely, maybe you will enjoy the rounder picture that is the show.
Sounds good.
Plus, what do you call it? It has one of Kate's favorite types of story arcs, the revenge story arc.
Oh yeah, but you just told me that the revenge story arc gets thrown out almost immediately.
Well, so. I mean, it's the whole first season.
Well, sure, but it doesn't sound like that's, like, there's way more past the revenge arc.
Yeah.
And I do love me a revenge story. That's probably where everybody is. That's where probably where all the people who dropped off were. They're like, I love revenge stories. And I'm like, me too. And they're like, it's not that. And you're like, oh, shit. But I'm still curious to, you know, knowing what I know.
Don't worry, Kate. He's killed enough people that maybe other people want to get vengeance on him.
I feel like no doubt. The story shifts just as people trying to get revenge on him and no one else. This is making him, he's not the main character anymore. Actually, that would be really actually good plot. Like a interesting.
So they may plot mayhaps be at least one arc where there is a character who is hunting him for all the crimes that he and maybe a significant murder that he committed.
I love it. That sounds good. All right, so we go to, I guess that's not a faux European setting. That's like an actual European Nordic.
Yeah, I mean, Thorfinn and a bunch of the minor characters are, but they've got like Leif Erikson, King, I think he's Kunit the Kind in history. I forget. This exact sort of fit. King Richard. There are a bunch of actual historical characters mixed in with the anime original characters.
But I was going to say, we're going to one, from one faux European setting to another, but it's not quite. Vinland Saga is like more grounded in reality. But the last thing I want to talk about is I have been reading Witch Hat Atelier. I believe it's Atelier because I think it's French.
Yes.
And I've read the first three volumes. Al's read this series before and it was even a manga of the month quite a while back at this point. I feel like I'm being Al right now. I was going to Harry Potter World, and so I was like, oh, I want some series to read that are like witches and wizards, but that aren't just like Harry Potter. So like, what am I going to bring with me that I haven't read? And so like, this was something that I had, and I was like, oh yeah, let me read this. So I've read three volumes so far, and you know, the plot thickens pretty quickly in this story, and it's about... So it's a faux European sort of setting, and witches are around, they help people, they kind of keep the peace in certain areas, and they like help with, you know, something terrible has happened, and they'll like show up and do some magic to like restore things and things like that. But it's like all magic is really closely guarded. Because, shocker, humans were horrible in the past and did a bunch of bad shit with magic. I know. Who could have ever thought? So, basically, it's now, you know, limited to really specific people who have to apprentice for many years, and it's like controlled by like the witch government or whatever. In fact, to the point where if a normie sees a witch perform magic, their memory is erased because you're not supposed to reveal the secret of magic to regular people. We start our story with this girl, Coco, who is not an apprentice to magic. She just, like, thinks magic is cool. She's a child. Some cobblestones light up via magic. And, you know, she just thinks it's awesome because magic is awesome. Who wouldn't think it is? And in town one day, a mysterious mask-wearing witch gives her a book and kind of unbeknownst to sort of anyone else, it is actually a book that teaches you how to draw magic. Because in this world, you draw it like on paper with ink and it can do all kinds of stuff. And so this is like super illegal, but you know, she's a child. Nobody knows that she has this thing. And a witch finally comes to her like little town one day for various reasons. And of course she's like very excited about it and, you know, is like, I'm gonna learn how to do magic. You know, she's been trying to do it and she finally like is able to do a spell in the book. And it's really bad. Things go bad. It's not like horrible things have happened. And the witch that was there, like, decides to take her with him and apprentice her instead of erasing her memories, because the masked witch that gave her the book is actually part of this secret band of witches that are like the rogue terrorist witches. And some, for whatever reason that I do not know yet, you know, Coco is somebody that they are like really interested in. They think that she's going to like save magic and save them. And like, also those witches have the creepiest Viking masks. Oh my God. They're like, every time I see them, I think of Friend, like from 20th Century Boys. And it like really creeps me out, those witches. Of course, being intelligent, I think, reading this story, I mean, I immediately was like, oh, wait, I'm supposed to believe that the people who are, like, elitist and keeping the magic, they're all good people. They're just the good, and all the people who aren't learning magic are all the, you know, don't deserve it. Like, of course, this is sus. but there's, like, yeah, so there's this rogue group of witches, and Coco's mentor is been wanting to like get clues about them. So that's why instead of her erasing her memory, because he's like, well, she's not like the only person who's like seen them and like interacted with them and seen this book, because the book is gone. And it's so into the witch library. And so it's like, he wants her to like tell him this information. So he's trying to like investigate them at the same time. He's also super mysterious. I don't know what his motives are yet. And he also like erases some people's memories where I am. And like, it wasn't cool. So like, there's just like some really cool stuff going on. At the same time, so we've got like that. We've got like all this intrigue. And then at the same time, it's like a magical girl show because she's an apprentice and she's one of four apprentices. They're all these like very young teenage, like preteen girls. They each have very different personalities and very different approaches to magic. And so I feel like they're the like, and they all have uniforms, but they're like slightly different. So it's like they're the magical girl team. Yeah, it's
and mask witches be interfering.
Yeah. Mask witches be like doing some mysterious stuff. And like there's also like almost like a Knights Templar kind of group who are like, we have no feelings and we just like abide the law at all times. And, you know, so there's just like a lot going on, like political, there's like a lot of political stuff, but not overly where it's like, that's the whole story. It's really got like a lot of mystery to it. I also think the way they do magic in here is really cool.
Finally, Kate, you've gotten to the most important part, magical systems. Thank you.
So like I said, you draw, you know, it's drawn. So like the better you can draw, the sort of sigils that they do, like the better your magic works. Or like if you draw, I like the kind of alterations you can do to it, because it's like, oh, if you draw like one line like really big and one really small, like it might make the magic sort of like off kilter, but that might be what you need to like turn something or go in a certain direction. Coco, who is, you know, hasn't been learning, hasn't lived in a magical environment and like hasn't been learning magic or studying since she was a child to become an apprentice, is of course like behind, but you know, she has, you know, she's like the character who like doesn't know how to do it, but she's got all these like, because she's not hemmed in by the rules, she has these like sparks of brilliance because she doesn't think about, you know, she's not like overwhelmed by like knowing how things work. So she's just like, well, what if we just like did this? And they're like, whoa, like I wouldn't have thought of that. And of course there's like her rival who's like the super serious one. That's why I said it's like a magical girl sort of vibe. So I also like, so in order for witches to do magic in front of regular humans without them knowing, you have to basically draw it without looking inside your like sleeves, and like they have these outfits that like allow them to like draw so nobody can see how they're drawing and stuff, which is really, you know, like it's really cool. And then it also has, this actually ties into like, so we got Vinland Saga, we got the faux European setting to tie into Vinland Saga. Then we've got like some magic tech, because like sometimes they've like etched things into metal so that you can like put two rings together and like that can do magic, but if you take them apart then like, you know, it stops the spell and stuff like that. So we got some like magic tech in here as well, so we can tie that in to Reincarnated Princess. I like that the series, it's kind of, I think it's actually amusing that the series takes the drawing of magic so seriously that I could learn to draw, like if magic was real, I could learn to do it from this book, because there's like instructional moments where it's like, do you do know that this doesn't work, right?
Well, because okay. It doesn't work, Kate, because you forgot one important thing. You don't have the magic ink.
That's what it is. That must be it.
Because you have to, you can't use just regular old, you know, squid ink from, you know, your local stationery store.
Right. That's what they sell at the local stationery store, squid ink.
You got to use in ye olde. You've got to use like the special magic infused ink.
Oh, and there's different kinds of magic infused ink too. You're right, Al. Well, also, I'm assuming after I finish reading this manga, I think it's still running, but I assume after we all finish reading it, it erases your memory.
Yes.
So that you know, you can't take the secret of magic with you after reading it.
Or, Kate, maybe the whole series is essentially a series made by a master wizard, and it's a secret indoctrination book that, what do you call it, at the, if you finish the series, it tells you where to get your first bottle of magic ink.
So rock, you can, on!
So you can, what do you call it, disrupt the snooty, what do you call it, magic elites. That's actually
the status quo. I like it.
Book of Rebellion.
I love it. It's really good, and like, Coco has she's like got a good attitude to be our heroine. She's had some tragedy, she's had some hardship, but you know, she's like committed. I'm just super curious about the mysteries.
Yeah, no. Also, yeah. I like that the fact that she's a very active protagonist, like all of her progress and woes are mostly her doing. You know, it was her mess up that got her, you know, as you mentioned, with the tragedy is, I won't mention either, but she's the cause of the tragedy. She's the one who mostly moves her story forward. Because I feel like sometimes female protagonists can be very passive and just swept along in their stories.
Or like things just happen to them.
Although, I feel like sometimes male main characters in wish fulfillment stories can be that very much that way too. But I feel like she's rarely active in her own story, which is good.
I also like that she rescues herself, mm-hmm. essentially, or like she solves, even though if somebody puts her in a situation, because that does happen, especially quite a bit here at in the beginning, there's like a couple besides the like tragedy that sort of brings the story forward. There's like two things that happen pretty early on where like other characters are sort of manipulating the situation, but like she solves those problems or solves them together with other people. And so I really like, that's what I was kind of saying was like, or earlier was like, I kind of like her ingenuity a little bit. Like I feel like she thinks outside the box in situations, and I like really appreciate that about her. We have these young child characters as like the main protagonist, but I feel like a lot of the adult characters, especially her mentor, are like secondary protagonists. Like there are definitely parts of this story that are like just them doing something. It's not, you know, like, and the, especially the mentor who's like clearly keeping some information, you know, to himself.
Him in the Templars and stuff like that.
Yeah. And so like, there's some really interesting like adult characters that I'm like, oh, I want to know, you know, more about them, or like, what's up with that? But it still is like really Coco's story. And so like, we do have like little interludes of other people, but it's really like her story. And I liking the growing relationships between her and the other three apprentices. And I've only just started to sort of get to know a little bit of the backstory for one of them. And I'm curious what the other ones are like. I definitely like, my favorite is, I don't know how to say her name, Rickshet. I don't know how to say her name, but she's the one who's like, I hate tests. Like, it's all bullshit. But like, I think it's certainly obvious that like, you're supposed to see this one other character as like very prickly and like not appreciate how she's treating our main character. But I think that you get to really understand the like, oh, I get like where she is coming from. Like, and I think that helps the story so much and doesn't feel so much like the mean girl character, you know, like I feel like it quickly pushes that along to like real character development and real thought behind.
As opposed to, I'm here to be antagonist, to line one over.
Right. And like, oh, I'm just going to be here to like thwart the main character all the time, or like get in her way or whatever. Also, of course, it has the perfect setup of like, Coco is new to the magical world, so therefore she gets to be our point of view character and like introduce us to a lot of things. Like they go shopping one, you know, like there's a whole bunch of the shopping trip, and like there's a character that she meets who has a particular, like the way that his eyes work is different than many of the other witches. And like, it actually quickly comes up that I like that the mentor actually says, well, like witch society is very, like, it's not very open to people who are different, or like, it's not really set up to, if like you can't do it this way, then like we're not going to accommodate any differences. So like, I thought that was an interesting commentary, and I'm curious to see if and when that comes up more in the story. Oh, but, you know, they're obviously all the good witches. They're totally 100% good.
Clearly the good guy organization.
Absolutely.
They just, you know, what do you call it? As the old joke, they just happen to have death heads as their, you know, their symbol. You know, nothing wrong with that. Nothing weird here. All good guys.
Yep. They're absolutely just erasing people's memories and hoarding power for themselves because altruism. Yeah, so really good. I'm only 3 books in, and I think there's like 6 or more books out at this point. The art is also really, really detailed, really good. Yeah, I highly recommend it. Perfect, like, combination of magic and mystery.
Oh, yeah, no, I really enjoyed that series. I just fall a little behind, but, I mean, I loved that series. It was very good. It definitely feels like one of those series that, if and when it gets an anime, will probably really take off. And it just needs that little anime push, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wonder if they're waiting for some point in the manga.
Yeah, no.
You know, like, are they waiting for, like, a specific arc to be over or, like, something? Because I think it's maybe won some awards.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know, I don't think it's, like, some obscure series. But, yeah, I could see it being, because it could definitely, you know, fill a huge void if you're like, it's like super, it's much, much, much more serious than like a Little Witch Academia, but like, you know, it's like, fills that like witch, really witchy, wizardy. Also, everybody gets their own specific hat. I'm sure that would be a very popular, like,
cosplay.
Yeah, it would be like, oh well, now you can make your own, because when you get to become like a full-fledged witch, you get to like design your own hat. So yeah, just definitely people recommend.
I'm my own anime original witch, and here's my anime original witch hat.
Do not steal.
Yeah. I found it fascinating, and it just popped into my mind that it was something I wanted to talk about this month. So, it turns out, since, you know, most of our viewers are probably unaware of this, my roommate really likes VTubers and watches VTubers all the time. And I, being in the same apartment, since he's my roommate, kind of passively, I'm in the room a lot of times, but there was one thing that I watched alongside him the whole time because I thought it was a fascinating experiment and something I could talk about here. So if you are aware of the VTuber Fauna, I forget her last name, she's like a member of the second generation Hololive, and they sometimes do watch-alongs. They'll watch a series and you watch it on your own computer, and then they, you know, talk alongside it, and you can also see the chat. And my roommate really likes to watch series this way. But one of the series that Fauna had never finished was Toradora. So she really wanted to finally go back and like watch from the beginning, so she could finally see the last 2 episodes of Toradora. And I was fascinated by this, because if you have listened to this podcast for a while or know Kate and I, you will know that we have always been fascinated by the fan reaction to Toradora. And so Fauna is definitely younger than me and Kate, but she's older than a lot of the people who watch her. So a lot of the people who were in chat had never seen Toradora. So it was almost like being able to see a whole new generation of people experience Toradora for the first time. So I was fascinated to see, like, wood. It's like almost 2 decades old at this point, right?
No. Let's see. 2 decades? 20 years? There's
no, maybe not.
No way.
Let's see. At least a decade old, right? I don't remember when anything ever came out anymore. So it came out in 2008.
Okay. It's not 15.
15. So 15 years ago. Still a decent amount of time ago. So I was very curious.
There are people watching her that weren't even born when Toradora came out. Is that possible?
I am, like, I think a lot of VTubers are like teenagers, so.
Okay.
Let's not dwell on that.
Okay.
Because
okay.
Only darkness and depression.
Yeah, I my mind is just elsewhere now, but continue.
So one, it was enjoyable to watch Toradora again. It's still an amusing series. You know, not like the greatest series that I've ever seen, but I think it was enjoyable. It was still enjoyable upon a rewatch. It was interesting also to watch my roommate, like, comment on stuff, like, because I knew certain little seeds that had been laid in advance and new twists. So it was like, yeah, I know it's coming, or I know why you think that, but that's wrong. But yeah, no. So the thing that always, I think, fascinated us about Toradora was the name of the damn series is Toradora. The main characters are the titular tiger and dragon. So, you know, it's Ryuji and what's the Taiga. Yeah. So Ryuji and Taiga, like, could not be more clearly the destined couple at the end of the series. But the number of people who were, like, what do you call it? If you were an Amy fan, she clearly has a character design to, what do you call it, have fans. But, like, the number of people who, like, deluded themselves into thinking that Amy Ryuji was going to be the end game of this series was fascinating. And the fact that 15 years later, that still happened is, like, it is clear that it was not that generation of anime fans that was deluded. It is just a people thing. Because I was, like, curious if, like, when, like, the, like, Ryuji Amy shippers were, like, shocked that that's not the way the story goes, like, would it be just like one or two weird outliners and everybody else would be like, duh. And, like, we're like, all right, that was just a weird fluke of when we watched it. Nope. Like, the Amy apologists, like, never surprised me. But, like, the fact that, like, I didn't not think it was going to happen, but it was nice confirmation that that was something that would always happen.
I wonder if, because I feel like it's, I don't know, people are weird. Like, it's like, guys, if you're not into this relationship, you don't gotta watch this show. Like, it's time to leave. Like, just go. But the thing is I think maybe a lot of people who ship that are just Amy fans. Like, mm-hmm. So it's like, I guess they're watching the show for Amy. But then, like, all right, well, you can't be upset, right? Yeah. Like, you could be like, oh, I wish this was the story. But you can't be like, genuinely upset. I mean, I'm not saying that they weren't. Like, probably they were. But I feel like I'm saying that you can't be.
Kate, the official, what do you call it? The official voice of reason says, you are fools.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think going into a romance, especially one named that, like you said, it's all in the name. Because I think there are plenty of stories where we have love triangles or, like, all kinds of love shapes. Right? And the name of the story doesn't tell you the answer. And maybe the author doesn't know the answer from the beginning. I actually don't think that's ever true. But, like...
Or you know, there are classic examples where, like, you know, there was one ship maybe, like, planned in the start. And then because of author preference or, you know, opinion polls or character, you know, reader outcry, the story has changed.
Right. But if the title, if it's in the title, I feel like I think we need to have a discussion about comprehension. This actually ties into Vinland Saga. The story that you want, that's not this story. And that's okay. You can go to a new story. But I don't know if it's this story's fault that it's not the story that you wanted, because it told you what the story was. Now maybe Vinland Saga you could be like, well, I didn't know this was what the story was, but Toradora tells you. It's the title of the book. So that's funny.
I just wanted to share that because I thought it was like I couldn't have set up such a
like a scenario to study.
Yeah, so it's like, so it's just, since it naturally occurred, I just had to, just take in this, like, ability to, like, you know, actually study it. Like, if I was, like, you know, some kind of, like, actual academic and researcher, I would have, like, studied like the number of comments and number of people, but that's a little beyond my, but I was just, it was very interesting to me to like see the old patterns flare up again,
the old rivalries.
I will say this is neither here nor there, but also just insight into my roommate's preferences, but I did not notice the first time, or mostly the second time, but the show was also clearly ahead of its time because it's a little on the down low, but that show is very clearly affectionate about Amy's butt before, like, being into butts was a thing in anime. Like, just before, it was, like, just before, like, anime really, like, gained, like, the Western, like, interest in butts. But, like...
I hope everyone just quotes that out of context. That was just, like, a really weird thing to say, Al. So, like, I just hope that we could just take that out of context and just insert it.
If I was popular, I'm sure that people would clip it and just use that out of context. But we're not popular enough for people to do that, thankfully. But, yeah, no, it was... it was very interesting. It was also interesting look back into the type of romantic comedies that, you know, it is a very 2008 romantic comedy. Also, I was reminded, I don't know if you knew this, one of the major changes at the very end of the book, how the anime differentiates from the original light novels.
I might have known this. Like, years ago. You know, when I was watching, yeah. But now I don't remember.
So, the end of Toradora, the anime, is, for spoilers for a show from 2000.
I think 10 years is the limit, right? Yeah. We're at 15, so.
So, after leaving the school to live with her mom, on graduation, Taiga comes back and, you know, is reunited with Ryuji. The end. There is one major difference in the light novel. She comes back, is reunited with Ryuji, and he is shocked because she has a baby bump.
Whoa, okay.
Which is not.
Has anybody in anime ever got teen pregnant?
Well, apparently in the light novel.
I'm saying in an anime. I mean.
There is, what do you call it? There is the infamous school days.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, it's pretty rare.
Yeah.
It is incredibly rare that, because they don't get to, I don't think they even get to that in Karakano. They don't get to it. Spoilers.
That's more than.
That's a really old. Yeah, that's like the only one I can even think of where. I'm trying to remember if anybody in Say I Love You gets pregnant. I don't think so. Shockingly. Wait. No, they're not teenagers. Okay. Like now I'm like, oh no, that's Jose. Yeah, it's like really, really rare. I mean, I feel like anime almost pretends that like people just like don't even have babies via like regular like bodily, you know, it's like, oh, babies just like appear occasionally in Precure, but they're not teen pregnant, they're like moms or whatever, somebody's mom. But otherwise I think anime just pretends like one day you were just there.
but in modern anime it's very important that eventually you get pregnant. Like, the number of, like, anime where, like, you haven't, like pushing a very, like, pro-boosty...
Oh. All I can think now is Darling in the Franks. Oh, wait, yeah, okay, that one, I think, probably. Anybody in Code Geass get pregnant? All right, enough of this. All right, thanks everybody. That's the end of the episode for the month. Great place to end, as always. And we will see you in April. Maybe we'll be doing spring shows then. It depends on how early we record.
If not, we'll be doing another, like, insight into shows. But no matter what, we will see you next month.